Good afternoon, Audio Journal listeners. This is Bill Ruggiero. I am on this new show, Talking Topics. This show was provided by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, and I am your host, Bill Ruggiero. Now, we're going to have a special guest here. I'd like to introduce you to Jennifer Daly, who works for the Mass Commission for the Blind in Worcester. Glad to have you along, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Yeah, and our first question is, where did you come from, and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a long-term, I suppose, resident of Worcester. I moved here in 2001. I have a husband who I've been married to for over 20 years. Once you hit that mark, you kind of lose track. And I have two teenage daughters, Skylar and Alyssa.
And also, tell us how long you've been working for the Commission for the Blind and when you started.
Well, I've been with the Commission for the Blind since 1999.
Wow.
So I can't even do the math.
yes, that's quite years ago.
Yes, and I started off as a rehab teacher, and I today am a rehab teacher. So I did take a little bit of a break from rehab teaching and went to what was then called the Deafblind Unit, but now is called, I believe, the Deafblind Extended Services Program. And then I love the human interaction of teaching. And once my rehab teaching position that I left popped up, I slipped back into it.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. Yeah, are there any success stories about your career?
I have quite a few. One of them is you.
Yeah.
I remember when you were not using any kind of cellular device, and you said that you wanted to use a cell phone. And
yes.
So we said, let's try this. And, you know, using VoiceOver with a smartphone is difficult. You have to learn different finger gestures.
Yes.
And
yes.
You persevered and are now using that piece of technology.
Yes.
I have another story that I remember when I first started at the commission, a person sitting on stairs to go down the stairs because there were no railings on a piece of property that was Worcester's property. And they were having no success with getting a railing installed. So I actually called Larry Raymond at the time, was the disabilities coordinator, I think.
And, yes, yes.
And I called him up, and literally within months, the family called me back saying, I don't know what you did, but there's a railing, and now my mom, who is elderly, can hold on to a railing and walk down the stairs safely. So those are two that I can think of at the top of my head.
Sure.
Thank you. So this is Harry Duchesne, the executive director of Audio Journal. And I am so happy to be here with Jen Daly and Bill on Talking Topics. So, Bill, I'm curious. So Jen's just been sharing about some things she taught you. So do you remember everything?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I remember everything about the iPhone and how to double tap on things. And I remember the day she set it up for me. And she came in to the house, and we had to go through the process of doing it. And it was kind of hard at first. But I remember one time I got into, it said like 911 or something like that, and it kept calling 911. So I had to call Jen and ask her about it. You remember that, Jen?
I actually do not, but I'm glad that I could help you out.
Yes, you did, and you helped me get out of the problem.
Wow. So, Bill, What I really like about and appreciate about you is how determined you are. We talked about this before the interview started, and Jen was telling me about that too. And so I imagine when you first started learning, you probably had some, as you were just saying, you you probably had some obstacles. What was it like when you felt like you were learning all these skills and being more independent? What was that like for you?
Well, it was kind of hard at first, but Jen was there, and she would, like, for instance, I moved into shared living, and I live in Auburn now, and she had to put dots on the microwave for me to feel where the how to turn on the microwave. And I'm pretty good at that now, because I could heat up my dinner by myself and get myself to eat.
I remember doing that too. And I also remember you wanted to learn how to make your bed.
Yes.
And that was a challenge.
Yes, that is a challenge, except when you do the bottom sheet. Now, that is difficult. I hate doing the bottom sheet. I don't know if any of your listeners know that the bottom sheet is very difficult, because sometimes it doesn't stay in.
It sure is. You can sew buttons into two of the corners, but you have to remember which two corners that you sewed them into.
Mm-hmm.
So you know which end goes where.
Yeah.
But
yep.
It is. It's hard. It's hard for folks who do have sight too. It
what
takes
I do
me
is I
three
just,
times.
Is I just shove it in and hopefully it stays.
That's what I do too sometimes.
And then I get mad at it because it doesn't stay. Yeah, but you know what? If you're patient, you can do it.
That's right. And that's why I love working with you, Bill, because you do. You have patience with me, because
yes.
Some of the questions that you have for me, I don't have the answers. So sometimes I have to really think about it.
Yes.
You know, and come back to you.
Uh-huh.
So,
Bill, if it's okay with you, we're going to take a short break.
Yes.
And again, you're listening to Talking Topics with Mr.
Bill Ruggiero and Jennifer Daly and Harry Duchesne.
That's right.
Okay, let's take a break and be back right after this.
Hello, Audio Journal listeners. We are happy to report that the issue with the Audio Journal app has been fixed. Simply update the version of the app on your Apple device, and you will now have access to archive programming as well as live programming. If you have any questions, please contact Audio Journal at 508-797-1117. Happy holidays.
Season's greetings from your friends at Audio Journal. I'm volunteer Jean Dalbeck. I'm asking you to join so many others in supporting the programs you hear on Audio Journal every hour of every day. Please consider a financial gift. Any and every amount helps. To give, you can go online to www.audiojournal.org or mail your tax-deductible donation made payable to Audio Journal to 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Mass. 01606. And thank you and best wishes from all of us at Audio Journal.
And we're back here on Talking Topics. My name is Bill Ruggiero, and I'm here with Harry Duchesne and Jennifer Daly. And getting to our topic about sports, Jen, what is your favorite sport, and why don't you tell us?
So my favorite sport by far is hockey. I absolutely love the sport. I am season ticket holders with my dad and another gentleman to the Boston Bruins. I love Brad Marchand. He's my favorite, number 63.
Yes, I like him too. And score some goals. He hasn't been scoring any goals in a while.
He came back from an injury early.
Yeah,
you know,
yep. Yeah, I heard about that. He had a lower body injury or something to his leg.
I want to say
like
it was hip related, and he wasn't supposed to come back till I think this month, and he came back earlier than expected. And
yes,
I was excited to see him on the ice.
Yeah, yeah. And my favorite is Patrice Bergeron. I really like him.
Yeah.
And I think that he'll be a good player for the Bruins. Bruins have been doing really well.
Extremely well.
Yes.
I did not expect such a great season because they did change coaches. So
yes,
they have
Jim Montgomery. They used to have Bruce Cassidy, and now he's gone to Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he's on the Golden Knights now. He's the coach.
I'm just excited that a coach could come in and do well with the team because, you know, sometimes when there's a change, you know, the performance level of the team goes down, but that did not happen with the Bruins.
Yeah. But I think the Bruins are going to win and get to the playoffs. I don't know about the Stanley Cup. I hope they make it. I really do.
I do too.
And what's your prediction for this season?
I kind of just go and watch and hope for the best. I always hope that they go into the postseason.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they will.
And that brings up a time where we went to the game last year. Remember that?
That was fun.
Yes, it was. It was fun. And they won 3-1. And they played the Florida Panthers at the TD Garden.
Yes. Was that your first game?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
Yes, it was.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was your favorite part of the game?
Well, my favorite part was when they score the goal and they have the horn. I love their horns.
And their celebration song, too, is very... Yes.
Yeah. And also, do you have any hobbies?
Well, I actually love listening to podcasts, a certain genre that isn't really, I guess it's kind of a guilty pleasure. It's true crime. I listen to this show called Crime Junkies and also this show called Morbid, and I'm kind of obsessed.
That's on iHeartRadio.
I listen to it on Pandora because I'm kind of old school and Pandora was the first streaming that I ever encountered. So yeah, I listen on that, but I'm not sure if it's streamed on other sources.
Yeah.
But yes, I am.
Crime Junkies. I never heard of that.
Yes, it's about different things that happen that, you know, aren't really pleasant, but the hosts try to find justice for the people.
Yes.
You know, and I think their philosophy is if they broadcast it, that people will listen and maybe someone who knows something could bring it to the attention. And they actually have charity work that goes on that, like, they give money to DNA testing. So people who aren't identified that are victims actually, have been identified and brings, you know, some comfort and closure to families. So yeah, that's kind of why I listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, what else do I like to do in my spare time? I binge watch certain shows that I find out about and, you know, I'm kind of a media person.
Yeah, me too.
What kind of things do you like to do in your spare time?
Well, I love to listen to sports. I love to listen to the Celtics and the Bruins and the Patriots, of course. I really enjoy listening to things. And I pick out podcasts myself, like the Toucher and Rich podcast. And I listen to the Sports Hub a lot, and I listen to Bertrand and Zolak, and I love them.
And Bill, remind our audience, what is your favorite hobby that you do for Audio Journal?
Oh, yeah, doing the weather and the sports schedule. I love that. You know, I tell everybody what the sports schedule is and all the Boston teams who are playing and stuff like that. And by the way, the Bruins are playing tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets at 7:00.
That's awesome. I really appreciate your knowledge of all that, because how else would I know? Like, this today, I heard you earlier announced when the Celtics were playing the Pacers tonight.
Yes. Play Indiana at the Garden.
That's right.
Yeah, at 7:30.
Yeah. So do you know who the center for the Celtics is this year? What his name is?
No, I don't.
Uh-oh. You mean I stumped you on a question?
Yeah, you did. Who wasn't expecting that, but... Right,
well, next time that we interview someone, you better know that answer.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
All right, well, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back after this, and you're listening to Audio Journal Talking Topics.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
Okay, well, we are back here at Audio Journal. It's the holiday season, you know, and everybody's out there doing their shopping. And let's ask Jennifer Daly what her favorite holiday is. Jen?
Well, I would say my favorite by far is Thanksgiving. And I love it because it is all about gathering with friends and, you know, recognizing what you're grateful for.
Yeah.
You know, I love Christmas, don't get me wrong, but I do sometimes feel like it is kind of like you feel obligated to like buy things and it's very, you know, in my opinion, and I don't want to discourage people from this being their favorite, is the reason why I love holidays is the people, not like all the corporate stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like Thanksgiving the most. How about you, Bill?
Well, I do like Thanksgiving a lot, and I like Christmas too, but my favorite holiday is Thanksgiving because I like to eat and I like to spend time with my family, my dad and my brother and sister. And, you know, I just like to have to eat the turkey and watch football.
Oh, yes. Football is a major sport around Thanksgiving. And
yes.
I can imagine. I can picture you sitting around and cheering on the players.
Yep.
What is your favorite part, like, meal, you know, part of the meal? Do you enjoy a certain food?
I enjoy the mashed potatoes, the stuffing, and the turkey, and also mac and cheese, too.
Oh, so I am more of a dessert gal, so I love pumpkin pie. Apple is good as long as there's vanilla ice cream on top. And I have to admit, I have a sweet tooth. Do you have a favorite flavor of pie that you like?
I like chocolate cream pie.
Mm, yes, that is good.
That is good. And I like that pie at Burger King. They have the Hershey's pie.
Oh, my gosh.
With the chocolate, you know.
That sounds delicious.
Yes. And I want one.
Perhaps you can ask someone for Christmas to get you one.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. A Hershey's pie.
So this is Harry again. And Bill, I learned something about you. I don't know. I think it was about a month ago. You were in the studio with me and we were rehearsing for something else. And you actually love to sing Christmas songs.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
What's one of your favorites?
Jingle Bells.
Jingle Bells?
Yeah.
Are you willing to share with the audience?
Okay, I'll sing. Okay. Oh, dashing through the snow in one horse open sleigh. All the fields we go, laughing all the way. Oh, bells up, pop till ring. Making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing in the sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
All right. Nice job, Bill.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I think we're ready to close up, but I just have a couple more questions. And Bill, do you mind if I ask Jen if she has any advice for our listeners since she works for the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind? Would that be all right if I ask her that question?
Yes, that would be fine. Thank you.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Jen.
Okay, so my advice, I've worked in the field for 20 some odd years, and, you know, I've met so many different people with so many different visual challenges. And my one piece of advice is, you know, don't give up, you know, and it's easy for me to say because I do have my sight, but I've seen so many success stories, you know, and reach out if you need help to the Commission for the Blind. You know, as a rehab teacher, I can actually go into your home and work on, you know, daily living skills, some basic phone use knowledge. I can perform assessments and you know, you're not alone. There are other people in the community, you know. They have low vision support groups. I know of one here in Worcester I speak at every year, and it's just a great resource to have people to speak to who are possibly going through the same things that you are going through now. I'd like to share the phone number for the Commission for the Blind if you need to get in touch with us. It's 1-800-392-6450. That's our Boston, Maine office number. We have a wonderful woman who emails the folks in Central Mass, and then we get the message that you are in need of a question answered or supports or whatnot. And again, that number is 800-392-6450. And I'm going to pass the mic back. And or Bill, do you have any last words before we sign off?
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in here, Jen. And hopefully you guys will stay tuned for further shows that we are doing for Talking Topics. And I want to say that this program is provided by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. And this program will be archived so you can hear it on your leisure time. But this has been Bill Ruggiero along with Harry and Jen saying have a good afternoon. Bye.
This is Bird Note. In birding lingo, a lifer or life bird is any species you see or hear for the first time. Birders get very excited about lifers. Some even mark the occasion with a special dessert called lifer pie. The tradition started at a birding festival in Northwest Ohio called the Biggest Week in American Birding, where attendees celebrate new life birds at the local tavern over a slice of homemade pie. Any flavor will do. Lifer pie is more about the feeling than the filling, making it easy for anyone to join in. For example, if it's your first time hearing a northern yellow warbler sing, "Sweet, sweet, sweet, I'm so sweet," you definitely deserve a sweet treat. But if you'd prefer something savory, no problem. Grab a piece of pizza pie. There's no wrong way to celebrate birds. Because let's be honest, birding isn't always a piece of cake. But lifers are always worth a slice of pie. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is brought to you by Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
The following program is brought to you by Audio Journal, a radio reading service intended for a print impaired audience. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind, with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, its staff, or volunteer readers. Welcome all to Audio Journal's Poets' Corner, the program that offers its print-impaired audience and other listeners the opportunity to listen to poetry of people from all walks of life, of those from the distant past right up to the present day. This production is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm George Bloomquist, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading the poems from the pens of poets such as Susan Zimmerman, Dave Baldwin, Anya Silver, and Judith Sornberger, to name but a few. They, among others, are found in the wonderful anthology The Path to Kindness, Poems of Connection and Joy, edited by James Cruz. In his introduction to this anthology, Cruz notes that, quote, "Poetry is an ideal tool in times of uncertainty and change in our lives because it grounds us in the now, opening our hearts and minds to the worlds outside and within. That brings us closer together until we see, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. put it so well, that we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied to a single garment of history." So, without further ado, let's begin our program now with the poem Get Close by Susan Zimmerman, in which she ponders the notion that, upon closer examination, things we perceive and experience in life aren't really what they initially seem to be. Here, then, is Get Close by Susan Zimmerman. So close, you see something you thought you knew as if for the first time. Then closer, beyond seeing, lost, mystified. Like the time I photographed the gray shadow on the side of a tree, magnifying until I realized it was not a shadow, but growing moss. until I realized the white dots were not dots, but tiny flowers blooming in the moss. Until I was so close, I disappeared. In the whole universe, there was nothing, no one but the tree and me, and we were only one thing. Susan Zimmerman is a retired lawyer who lives and writes in Toronto. Her poetry chapbook, Nothing Is Lost, was published by Caitlin Press, and her poems are published in periodicals such as Room, Fiddlehead, The Ontario Review, Fireweed, Matrix, and Calyx. She has taught a creative writing course called Writing Like Breathing at a healing center, and since her retirement in 2015, she has returned to participating regularly in poetry retreats and workshops. Have you ever looked back in your life and wistfully recall someone who had crossed your path for only a brief moment? Well, such is the case in our next poem, Summer Romance, by Dave Baldwin. It reads, "Of all my days to middle age, you gave me less than 10. So little time from moon to rising moon. A meteor flared and fell on an August night. Now 30 winters dead. The lingering light. For that, I give you thanks." Dave Baldwin retired from the Walt Disney Company Technology Division in 2017 after 40-plus years as a technical writer and editor. He has been a naval officer, college teacher, and master's track and field athlete. In 2009, he served as the National Secretary for the Haiku Society of America. Dave lives in Lake Stevens, Washington, a few miles north of Seattle. Up next, another stroll down memory lane in Late Summer by Anya Silver. August evening, church bells, light shattered on the quick creek as in a Seurat painting, grass thick with Queen Anne's lace, the summer sun so late in setting that bedtime comes late for the children scattered in a garden to catch the slugs eating their plants. Late summer, and the roses in second bloom know what's coming. But for now, bells, water, laughter, my mother and I walking together arm in arm, because happiness is a decision each of us has made without even discussing it. Anya Silver won a Guggenheim Fellowship and the Georgia Author of the Year Award. She was the author of 5 books of poetry, all published by the Louisiana State University Press, as well as Second Bloom, which was published in 2017 by Cascade Books. Until her death in 2018, she taught English at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. The following verse poignantly reflects on the poet's interactions with her mother in her closing days of her life, and it's titled Assisted Living by Judith Sornberger. It reads, "This time, Mom, I'd stayed overnight at assisted living when you asked. Borrow a pair of your satin pajamas. Paint your fingernails pearly white. Finish off a box of Russell Stover chocolates with you. I wouldn't even complain when you pinched each piece to reveal its center, avoiding the dreaded marshmallow. Forgive me. I was trying to avoid sleeping on the sofa too narrow for my body, staying up later than I like while you filled ashtrays with cigarette butts and my eyes burned and watered from your smoke. This time I'd visit the past for as long as you wanted, sit with you hip to hip, looking at pictures of me and my sisters, the ones with scalloped white edges like the lace on our Easter anklets. I'd watch as many classic black-and-white flicks as you wished and weep beside you at their endings." Judith Sornberger is the author of 4 poetry collections. Her prose memoir, The Accidental Pilgrim, Finding God and His Mother in Tuscany, is published by Shenty Arts. She is Professor Emerita of Mansfield University, where she taught English and Women's Studies. She lives on the side of a mountain in the northern Appalachians of Pennsylvania. Next, When You Meet Someone Deep in Grief, by Patricia McKernan Runkel. Slip off your needs and set them by the door. Enter barefoot this darkened chapel, hallowed by loss, hallowed by sorrow, its gray stone walls and floor. You, congregation of one, are here to listen, not to sing. Kneel in the back pew. Make no sound. Let the candle speak. About this poem, James Cruz writes, Patricia McKernan Runkle's words call us to be as present as possible with another person, to recognize the sanctity of the space we share with someone who has recently endured a loss of any kind. She asks us to see the hollowing of grief as a hallowing as well, deserving of reverence. Patricia McKernan Runkel values the quiet work of listening to one another and building community. She has volunteered at a peer support center for grieving children and their families, worked as a writer and editor, and directed a choir. She has published poems, songs, and collaborative choral pieces, and an award-winning memoir on grief. Here's a touching account of a daughter's reunion with her father in Dream Visitation by Megan Buchanan. This morning, before dawn, my dad visited me in my dream. He was here, where I live now, in a house he never did see. I came down the wide staircase with a lost dog that had spent the night to find my dad sitting in a chair near the kitchen. As I walked into the lamp-lit room, he rose up and hugged me. He was wearing a red plaid shirt and his navy blue blazer, signifying important business. He was warm. It was him. He held me tightly in his arms. My tears streamed. With a gasp, I asked, "Dad, where are you now? Where did you go?" And he answered, "I am in the pixels of the pictures you are looking at." By which I think he meant, "I am here and everywhere." Megan Buchanan is a teaching artist, a poet, a performer, a collaborative dance maker, and an English teacher to students with language-based exceptionalities. Her collection, Clothesline Religion, Green Writers Press 2017, was nominated for the 2018 Vermont Book Award. Our next poem is a similarly themed verse from the pen of Phyllis Cole Dye. It's titled Ladder, for my father. It reads, "The night before you died, I dreamed a wooden ladder rose straight into the sky, propped against only a wall of air, yet sturdy on its feet, like you in that faded old photo, tall and lean, knee-high in a field of ripening beans. I wasn't with you at the end, but I know that when you left your bed, you mounted that ladder, young again, body light and nimble, clambering up the rungs, worn smooth by shoes and stained from use like wooden spoons. After a few uncertain steps, your long legs took them two at a time, a rapturous climb to glory, up past the crowns of maples and oaks, up past the tops of barns and silos, up past the soaring vultures and hawks, up through the thin, cool veil clouds. Now and then, on your way to the stars, I see you pause upon that ladder, look down from the heavens, not to gauge how far you've come, but to gaze with love on what you loved. Phyllis Coldeye began picking away on an old manual typewriter in childhood and never stopped. She has authored or edited 11 books in multiple genres, writing across what divides us, as she puts it. Her latest title is Staying Power, Writing from a Pandemic Year, Bell Sound Books, 2021. Originally from Ohio, she now resides with her scientist husband, college-bound son, and two cats in a 130-year-old house in Brookings, South Dakota. In our next poem, the author relates her little girl's remote interactions with her kindergarten schoolmates during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's titled, The Thing She Loves Most, by Michelle Mandolia. I hear my daughter introduce her favorite stuffed animal to her kindergarten class. The school year is more than half over, and she has spent it in this house, peering into this one screen. Her first name is Riri, I hear my daughter say, and her last name is Hillary. She doesn't have a middle name. I picture the audience, squares on her screen, her teacher's broad smile of interest, the alert posture of the boy who signs in first every morning, the foreheads of children looking down to doodle, as my daughter often does, the unoccupied desk of someone who is using the potty. These 5- and 6-year-olds have met Riri at least 10 times, and maybe 20. I am grateful for whatever instructional philosophy keeps the teacher from suggesting a new share. On these days, my daughter gets a few extra moments with the thing she loves most. Her turn over, her fingertips skim Riri's coat, settling on the mane, felted from so much washing. Michelle Mandolia works as an analyst at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. She lives with her husband and 2 children in Reston, Virginia. Our next verse ponders the boundless energy and the promise of youth in Last Day of Kindergarten, by Marjorie Sizer. In the photograph, the boy is ecstatic, set free, a young king, everything ahead of him. There is nothing he can't have if he wants it, and he wants it, as does his friend beside him. They are ready now to ride off together and slay dragons, rescue the world. It's all here in the park, after the last bell. It's here in the green summer they have been released to. It is here in their manhood. They've only finished kindergarten, but they understand freedom and friendship. They're on top of the picnic table. They're on top of the world in their tennis shoes. They have raised their arms. They are such men as could raise continents. They have survived. Look how their fingers reach the sky, and their legs are sure as horses. Their bodies will forever do anything they ask. Up next, Juvie Kid, by Jillian Wegener. Again, we meet in the hallway. As usual, he's sweeping the floor. Look at all the bugs, he says, leaning in to examine his pile of dust and flies. Hey, he says, when are you going to write poetry with us? His hair a wild halo, his eyes intense, his shoulders not yet as wide as mine. He means, when will I matter to you? I've been in here for 4 whole months, he says, but I'm getting out soon. I'm going to a group home far away. They gave me a choice, but I don't care where. Far away from here. Regulations say no handshakes, no touching. We aren't supposed to be talking, but we say good luck, good luck. We say something about second chances, something about taking the right path. We aren't supposed to be talking to him, this boy, excited at what's ahead. We turn and pause at another door. We know his slim chances. Pray for me, he calls. Pray for me, okay? Jillian Wegener lives in Central California. She's the author of The Opposite of Clairvoyance, 2008, and This Sweet Haphazard, 2017, both from 16 Rivers Press. She is the founding president of Modesto Stanislav Poetry Center. She is the past poet laureate of the city of Modesto, and as a volunteer, she has taught creative writing to teens in juvenile detention for 5 years. Here's a reflection on a particular COVID-19 moment in Make Believe by Emily Ligren. Mr. Rogers, what would you say to us now? I miss your soft voice and slow smile. Somehow you would remind us of what it means to share a neighborhood, how our breath travels farther than we think, but so can our care. You would have made the puppets tiny cloth masks, had them ask all the questions children need to ask, like why and how long and can't we? Let Daniel Tiger feel sad and antsy, itching under the ear straps. You would have explained it all patiently and truthfully. No, we don't know how long. Yes, it's okay to feel afraid. This is how we care for everyone right now. Maybe the adults would have listened, too. Emily Ligren is a poet and an outdoor educator who holds a bachelor's degree in geology biology from Brown University. Her poems have been published in Thimble Literary Magazine, the English Leadership Quarterly, Solo Novo, and several other literary journals. Her first book of poems, What We Were Born For, Blue Light Press 2021, won the Blue Light Book Award. She lives in San Rafael, California. Up next, What You Missed That Day You Were Absent from Fourth Grade by Brad Aaron Modlin. Mrs. Nelson explained how to stand still and listen to the wind, how to find meaning in pumping gas, how peeling potatoes can be a form of prayer. She took questions on how not to feel lost in the dark. After lunch, she distributed worksheets that covered ways to remember your grandfather's voice. Then the class discussed falling asleep without feeling you had forgotten to do something else, something important, and how to believe the house you wake in is your home. This prompted Mrs. Nelson to draw a chalkboard diagram detailing how to chant the Psalms during cigarette breaks and how not to squirm for sound when your own thoughts are all you hear. Also, that you have enough. The English lesson was that I am is a complete sentence. And just before the afternoon meal, she made the math equation look easy. The one that proves that hundreds of questions and feeling cold and all those nights spent looking for whatever it was you lost and one person add up to something. About this poem, James Cruz writes, "At times we might feel that we missed out on some necessary information for life handed out to everyone else long ago." Brad Aaron Modlin offers a playful yet sincere take on this idea as he explores what we all might have missed that day in the fourth grade when we are absent, unraveling a list of the kinder, wiser things we might wish our teachers would have taught us. It could have been useful, for instance, to be told that I am is a complete sentence, or we might have been shown how to find meaning in pumping gas, or ways to remember your grandfather's voice, or how to believe the house you wake in is your home. Perhaps we might all have felt more at home if we had been given the freedom and kindness as kids simply to be ourselves. Pondering the peaceful calm and beauty of a family scene as dusk approaches is the subject of our next poem. It's titled, On the Back Porch, by Dorian Lau. The cat calls for her dinner. On the porch, I bend and pour brown soy stars into her bowl, stroke her dark fur. It's not quite night. Pinpricks of light in the eastern sky. Above my neighbor's roof, a transparent moon, a pink rag of cloud. Inside my house are those who love me. My daughter dusts biscuit dough. And there's a man who will lift my hair in his hands, brush it until it throws sparks. Everything is just as I've left it. Dinner simmers on the stove. Glass bowls wait to be filled with gold broth. Sprigs of parsley on the cutting board. I want to smell this rich soup, the air around me going dark, as stars press their simple shapes into the sky. I want to stay on the back porch while the world tilts toward sleep until what I love misses me and calls me in. Dorian Lau's sixth collection, Only as the Day is Long, New and Selected Poems, was named a finalist for the 2020 Pulitzer Prize for Poetry. Her fifth collection, The Book of Men, was awarded the Patterson Poetry Prize, and her fourth book of poems, Facts About the Moon, won the Oregon Book Award. Lau is the co-author of the celebrated The Poet's Companion, A Guide to the Pleasures of Writing Poetry. Next, Moving, by Michelle Wiegers. I find myself jealous of those who rest quarantined inside their homes, while I have to pack every last item I own in order to carry it just a few blocks away. And now, as I reach around inside this new house, I keep looking for the things I know, certainties to hold me up, cushion me on all sides. How do I know that all will be well? Because the morning sun still warms my cheek, illuminating small flecks of dust on my glasses that look like layered circles of modern art. Because the red squirrel still comes to raid the feeders I hang, not intended for him, while the chickadee sings his same vibrant song. Because the ferns in my garden, I feared had not survived the move, are finally unfurling their green bodies. Because spring doesn't know the anxiety of uncertainty, but declares through her gentle unwrapping of the world, life will come again. Michelle Wiegers is a poet and mind-body life coach based in southern Vermont. Her work has appeared in Healing the Divide, How to Love the World, Birch Sing Anthology, and Third Wednesday, among other journals. In her coaching work, she is a passionate advocate for those who suffer with chronic pain and fatigue. We now conclude our program today with Lullaby for an Empty Nester by Suzanne Nussey. You have a bed that loves your bones. The dog snores softly at your feet, partnering your partner's drone. Hermit thrush and tree frog sing the creeping dark to sleep. Make a cradle of the night, a cradle for what's gone. Nothing to fear in your twilight. You are here. You are home. Suzanne Nussey has worked as an editor, writer, memoir coach, and writing instructor in Ottawa, Canada. Her poetry, creative nonfiction, and essays have been published in The New Quarterly, Event, The Fiddlehead, Prairie Fire, and Spark and Echo, among others. And she has won several national Canadian literary competitions. Suzanne has also developed and facilitated creative writing workshops for women living in shelters. She holds master's degrees in creative writing, Syracuse University, and pastoral counseling, St. Paul University. You've been listening to Poets Corner, a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you have any comments or suggestions for Poets Corner, please let us know by calling us at 508-797-1117 or by emailing us at info@audiojournal.org or by mailing us at Audio Journal, 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. Or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm George Blomquist, thanking you for listening. And now, stay tuned for other local programming brought to you by Audio Journal.
Medical Myths and Facts with Dr. Richard Curtis.
One of the biggest challenges in caring for older adults is medication safety. As people age, they often accumulate prescriptions, sometimes 10 or more at once. While each drug may have been useful at one point, the combination can increase risks such as falls, confusion, bleeding, or hospitalizations. Doctors call this polypharmacy. It's a leading cause of preventable harm in seniors. New digital tools are now helping us understand this problem. One example is MedSafer, an application designed to identify medications that may no longer be appropriate or may interact in harmful ways. It works by analyzing a patient's medication list against evidence-based guidelines and clinical trial data. For instance, it can flag drugs that raise fall risk, duplicate therapies, or medications that provide little benefit in advanced age. What's especially important is that these tools don't just generate a stop list. They give clinicians clear, personalized recommendations, such as safer alternatives, tapering strategies, and explanations that can be shared with patients and families. This makes the process collaborative rather than abrupt. Early studies of MedSafer have shown encouraging results. In hospital and nursing home settings, its use has helped doctors deprescribe unnecessary medications more confidently, with a focus on improving quality of life and reducing adverse drug events. For seniors, this often means fewer side effects, clearer thinking, and a lower risk of emergency room visits. Of course, these tools don't replace the human judgment of doctors and pharmacists. Instead, they act as a safety net, supporting better decisions, keeping care consistent, and making sure that what worked 10 years ago isn't still being prescribed when it's no longer safe. In short, applications like MedSafer represent a step forward in personalized, safer prescribing for older adults. By combining technology with clinical wisdom, we can help seniors stay healthier, more independent, and less burdened by risky medications.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.